Okay, I'd now like to call to order the December 20th regular meeting for the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission. We'll rouse for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
All right, thank you. The Metropolitan Planning Commission is holding a virtual meeting in effort to be compliant with the local state regulations regarding social distancing and to maintain the health and safety of all involved in public hearings. Excuse me. Petitioners and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, we have notices, proclamations, and acknowledgements. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This will be followed by the regular business, old business, and then adjournment. For each agenda item on the regular business, the staff will make a presentation and the staff presentation will be followed by a presentation by the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner would be allotted at a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or clarification or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for the public comment. If you wish to comment on an item that the board is considering at this time, we use the raise your hand feature on the screen for those that are attending virtually. If you are present, you are supposed to submit a blue card in order to speak towards a petition, and at the time that that petition is called, you will be called upon. At the appropriate time, you'll be recognized and the staff will unmute the microphone for the virtual attendees. At the appropriate time, you'll be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature for the virtual attendees and that those that are in that are present will speak. I will let you know if you reach your time. And we ask that you immediately wrap your comments once we notify that your time is up. If you are not certain that you want to speak, still submit your blue card and or use the raise your hand feature. And that once you are called upon, you will have the opportunity to decline your opportunity to submit comment. After we go through the public comment, the petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to public comment. And then we'll go into board discussion and enter into a vote. Once we go into board discussion, no public comment will be taken. Okay. So we'll go into the next item on the agenda. And that is the approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Cole, so moved.
Noah, second.
Any discussion on motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Okay, now we're going to the notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. December 20th, 2022, Personnel Committee meeting at 10:30 a.m. Was held in the Jerry Cerency Room. Here at our office. Oh, excuse me. That's right. My apologies. We canceled the personnel meeting, but we did have the finance meeting this morning at 11:30 here in the Jerry Cerency Room. Okay, now we'll go on to the next item, and as the items requested to be removed from the agenda. Prior to me reading these items, I know that quite a few of you have shown up to speak in regards to these items. I'd like to just make it known that the petitioner has the opportunity to remove the items from agenda just through the process. Some of these items were removed this morning. Staff took every action that they could to reach out to all those that they possibly could with the information that they have. We understand that they could present some inconveniences and for you all that may have taken off from work, taking lunch breaks and things of that nature, and we are wholeheartedly apologetic for the inconvenience. However, for offering up the due process to the petitioner as well as the public, we've done what we can to address that. And we don't want this to discourage you all from participating in this process. However, we have by the ordinance and things of that nature, we have to carry out what is documented and that right to that petitioner to be able to remove those items from the agenda. So once I read these items, again, we apologize if you are here to hear one of those items and you've been inconvenienced, but we will be hearing these items at another date. We still encourage you to show back up. But once I read these items, if one of these items applies to you, you're free to leave at your leisure. Okay, we'll move into those items, and that is the map amendment for Wildham Road, a rezone from A1 to RMF and RSF4. That's petition number 22-002692-ZA. Next item is a master plan amendment at 1901 Benton Boulevard, petition number 22-003026. Next item is map amendment at 362 Fort Argyle Road, a rezone from A1 to IL, and that's petition number 22-003510. Next item is the rezoning map amended at 1800 East 63rd Street. That's a rezone from RSF6 to a RMF-2-20, and that's petition number 22-004421. And lastly, a map amendment at 340 Buckhalter Road, a rezoning from RA County to RMF-1-12, and that's petition number 22-005069-ZA. Again, if you were here for either of those petitions, they have been removed from the agenda. We will notify you guys. We'll get notification from signage and or neighborhood associations of when those items reappear on the agenda. And we encourage you to come back out to speak on your behalf. Right, thank you. Move on to the next item.
I think, Mr. Chair, I think we need to vote.
Oh, yeah. Excuse me. So we have a motion to vote on the items removed from the agenda.
Cole's motion to remove items 3 through 7 from the final agenda.
Thank you.
Second, Noah.
All right, any discussion on the motion? Okay, we'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you. Okay, we'll move on to items requested to be withdrawn, and that is the map amendment for item 110 Old River Road, rezone from RA to BN, and that is a Z-1122. That's 000331.
Cole's motion to remove item 8 or withdraw.
Second. Okay, we have a motion made by Mr. Cole's and seconded by Mr. Noah to remove the items, to approve the items withdrawn. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, we're into a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you. We're now moving to the consent agenda. The consent agenda consists of items of which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and for which no known objections have been identified nor anticipated by staff. Any objections raised at the meeting will result in the item being moved to the regular agenda. At a 12:30 briefing, the staff will brief the commission on consent agenda items and, time permitting, regular agenda items. No testimony will be taken from applicant supporters or opponents, and no votes will be taken at the briefing. Okay, we'll move to that item on the consent agenda, and it is the approval of the November 8th meeting minutes. Do I have a motion for approval?
Cole's motion to approve the minutes.
No, a second.
Any discussion on the motion? We'll go into a voice vote for there as well. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you. The motion carries and the consent agenda is approved. We'll move into old business. There's none listed. And the next item on the agenda is the regular business. And that is that's the petition of a map amendment at 12500 Apache Avenue. It's a rezone from RSFE to BM. And that petition number is 22-004421-ZA.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Melissa Leto, MPC staff. All right, this first item, the petitioner Josh Yellen as agent for 12500 Apache LP is requesting a rezoning of a parcel from an RSFE residential single family estate district to a BM maritime business district in order to construct a restaurant and a marina. The petitioner is also requesting a special use permit, which would follow this item, to allow for the proposed restaurant with on-site consumption of alcohol. The property is currently zoned, as I said, a residential single family estate. Much of the subject site is vacant. Show you some site visits, photos of the property. Okay. So the subject parcel is mostly vacant with a portion of the restaurant's foundation remaining. So you'll see some of that portion on there on the photo. The petitioner intends to demolish the single family residence to the west side of the parcel and will use that as part of their restaurant use, hopefully overflow parking. The petitioner intends to demolish the single family residence. Adjacent to the subject parcel are single family residences across Apache Avenue from the subject site is the Bell's Landing Chatham County Park Services boat ramp and fishing dock. Which I believe I have a photo. This is their fishing dock. A good one at the boat ramp. Now here's more of the subject property and the existing foundation. All right, so in front of 12500 Apache Avenue faces the county's parking lot for the boat ramp and the fishing dock. And then past that, or also adjacent to the side, is the River House Condominiums, which is a gated community. Apache Avenue is a dead-end street, which dead-ends right here on the photo. There are several single-family residences and a gated condominium near the entrance of Apache Avenue named Hoover Creek Plantation. The petitioner has conducted two neighborhood meetings. The first meeting was held on October 29, 2022 at the Bell's Landing Clubhouse. The meeting included both Alderman Pertee and Commissioner Whiteley, along with 21 residents that reside off Apache Avenue. The meeting concluded with the petitioner stating there would be a second meeting that would include showing a conceptual site plan, elevations, and a rendering. Here is an example of what the petitioner showed at the virtual meeting that was held on November 28th, 2022. At the second meeting, there were six attendees, as well as Alderman Pertee and Commissioner Whiteley. The petitioner explained their conceptual plans and mentioned they will provide a neighborhood agreement to the Bell's Landing condominium residents prior to the petition going to City Council. This is their conceptual site plan with parking associated. They're proposing about 3,000 square feet. Of restaurant use. So they are providing currently right now 31 vehicle parking spaces. And this is their first floor plan. And then there'll be a second level where they'll have more restaurant seating and a bar area. And as a restaurant, they do have to provide 51% of food sales, even though they are requesting a special use for alcohol on site. These are some of their conceptual elevations. And they will have to go to DNR for their dock and to, for how large it will be. Trying to get a larger image of the rendering there. As for transportation network, Apache Avenue, which is classified as a local road, Apache Avenue connects to Fulton Road and Roger Warlick Drive. All three receive minimum traffic impact as most of the traffic comes from drivers commuting to their residences, driving behind the Armstrong campus of Georgia Southern University, and or driving to Aldi, a grocery store. There is a concern as to... this is the boat ramp, the county. This is the River House Condominium Association where they had their first neighborhood meeting. These are some of the existing house on the subject parcel, which is to be demolished. And this is Apache Avenue. So on a sunny Saturday and or Sunday, there can be parking overflow along Apache Avenue due to the public boat ramp. There is a concern that the proposed restaurant with on-site alcohol consumption may expand their minimum parking requirements without a dedicated overflow for customer parking, and that it may overflow onto Fulton Road, which is the connector. The petitioner currently has not dedicated space on the subject parcel for overflow parking, although he is here to speak about the petition. In regards to Chatham Area Transit, CAT, the property is currently not served by CAT directly. However, there is a bus stop at the beginning of Apache Avenue, closer to Abercorn, and then there is one right on the corner of Abercorn and Apache. As the comprehensive plan land use element, the Chatham County Savannah Comprehensive Plan Future Land Use Map, FLUM, designates the subject parcel as commercial neighborhood. The proposed BM zoning classification is for commercial marine facilities and limited commercial uses, which is compatible with the commercial neighborhood future land use designation of this parcel. Going over some of the review criteria, the range of uses permitted under the current and proposed zoning classifications are very different. The existing RSFE classification allows for detached single-family, agricultural, residential, marina, and docks. The proposed BM zoning classification would allow for a mix of commercial uses, specifically a restaurant and a marina. The area around the subject property is residential in nature with single-family as well as multifamily residential uses, with the nearest commercial uses are on Abercorn Street. The parcel historically has been commercial with its non-conforming classification prior to RSFE. The parcel is located on riverfront property and addresses the compatible zoning pattern due to where it is located. It is unlikely that there would be existing or changing conditions affecting the use and development of the property. If developed, it would most likely be a restaurant use. And as for the FLUM designation, the subject parcel as a commercial neighborhood, the proposed BM zoning classification is for commercial marina facilities and limited commercial uses, which is compatible. Based upon the review criteria, staff recommends approval of the request to rezone from RSFE to BM. And if I may continue with the special use, or should we stop?
I think we should go ahead with the special use, considering how they are related. Well, actually, Ms. Leto, since if the special use, I mean, if this rezoning isn't approved, then the special use is a moot point, so I maybe we should go ahead and
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think the board can hear both at the same time, okay, or hear them separately, but just to keep in mind that both of these items regardless of today's outcome, will be forwarded to the mayor and aldermen for a final decision.
Okay. So I let's go ahead and just hear them both for the sake of it, and you know, we'll vote separately.
Okay. For the special use request, the petitioner is requesting a special use pursuant to section 3.10 of the Savannah zoning ordinance to establish a restaurant with on-site consumption of alcohol and a marina. I showed you the site plans. Let me see. There was one. Oh, let me go to staff report. Okay. The area historically operated as a restaurant with a marina called Bell's Landing. The restaurant and marina were destroyed due to a fire in February of 2006. The petitioner plans to create a neighborhood agreement with the adjacent neighbors prior to city council. The neighborhood agreement will address any parking overflow, hours of operation, and live music restrictions. The petitioner is here to speak about those conditions as well. Per code, the minimum parking requirements for a restaurant are one vehicle parking space per 100 square feet. The proposed restaurant, like I mentioned earlier, would be approximately 3,000 square feet in size. And based on the conceptual site plan, the petitioner is providing 31 vehicle parking spaces. Based on the compatibility with the comprehensive plan and the ability to meet the criteria for a special use permit, staff recommends approval of the request with conditions. One, the special use permit shall be non-transferable. Two, the special use permit shall be on-premises alcohol only. And this item has received one letter of concern. And we do have someone here in person to speak on this item as well. I don't know if you had a chance to read the letter of concern. Otherwise, I can read it out to you. You've all read it? Okay. I'm here as well as the petitioner to answer any questions. And I did mention that there's someone here to speak.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for staff? Mr. Kegler.
Yeah, we and I think from the county's perspective, we have certain times of year, particularly during the spring and summer, when that site's used actively for launching boats. There's an issue now with parking, and I wanted to see how the petition was going to handle. You know, you talked about them providing some provisions for overflow parking. How are they going to deal with the availability of parking when we've got a lot of folks parking there to launch their boats?
Yes, I have the petitioner here to address some of that.
Any further questions for staff? Okay. Mr. Yeller.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the commission. For the record, Josh Yellen here today on behalf of the owners of the property. We have with us on behalf of the ownership group, Mr. Nathan Snyder and Mr. Matt Farahar. Between the three of us, we're hopeful to answer any questions that you may have in connection with both this rezoning and the special use request. And so, as you all are aware, or maybe some of you are aware, and some of you might need to be, learn some more information about this property in the same way that I did. This is a news article about the site from 1987, when it was the Bell's Landing Restaurant and Tavern. According to this article, the restaurant and tavern opened sometime around 1980. Prior to that, it was an existing commercial fish camp that had been in operation, we think, since the turn of the century. And it operated until 2006. And so for close to 40 years, this site was a commercial establishment, a restaurant and tavern known as Bell's Landing. In 2006, or I should say, prior to burning down in 2006, here's a an overhead of the site, much larger than what we are proposing today. It encompassed one, two, three, four buildings plus the covered marina. In 2006, it did burn down. Some of the remnants are actually still there as part of this Bell's Landing fire. And now it looks like this. There's still some remnants, as I mentioned, from the foundation. Parts of the dock are still there. And so the applicant is looking to take advantage of the site, which had been commercial for so many years. What is interesting about the site is that up until NUZO was passed in 2019, and it's a little hard to read here, but the site was zoned PBM. It was maritime business, the same zoning classification that we're looking for today. NUZO made this estate lots. I'm not sure that was the correct application of the zoning ordinance, and it couldn't be further from what it existed as. And in fact, the future land use map in the city's comprehensive plan continues to show this site as neighborhood commercial. It never reverted back to a residential classification. It has always been commercial, at least for the past 40 years. And so our rezoning request today is to restore this commercial use, to bring back the Bell's Landing Bar and Tavern, and to provide an amenity for the surrounding neighborhood. And so to that end, we did, as Ms. Leto mentioned, hold two separate neighborhood meetings, the first of which we had an excellent turnout, 23 persons were in attendance. We had Commissioner Whiteley, we had Alderman Purte, we even had Representative Stevens who attended. So we were very well represented in terms of that meeting by getting the appropriate policy and stakeholders in. We did hear some concerns from residents, but we also heard some overwhelming support for this application, provided that we can make this restaurant a neighborhood amenity. We want this to be the place where the residents living across the street can come. We want it to be the place where they can hang out, where they have their anniversary parties, and a place where they stop in on a weekly basis. And so as we went through those neighborhood meetings, we discussed the concept of a good neighbor agreement, which would be an executable document that would be signed by the homeowners association, the property owner, along with Alderman Purte as the representative of this district. And what we were trying to do in that agreement, and not to take any conditional authority away from this board, was to codify some of those conditions that we were willing to impose upon ourselves in a separate document. And so we had seen the letter that came in from one of the adjacent residents, primarily concerned about buffers, parking, and noise. And a lot of those issues were issues which we were planning on addressing in the neighborhood agreement. We were planning on limiting our hours to 10 p.m., 9 p.m. during the week, 10 p.m. on the weekends. Live music, we were going to restrict to those hours as well. We wanted to put a condition in that agreement that we would obviously adhere to all of the City of Savannah noise ordinances, which, if any of y'all have read them, are very restrictive. And so from the property line, police and code enforcement would be able to show up any day of the week with a decibel meter reader. And if we were in violation of more than, I want to say, 60 decibels at the property line, which is roughly the sound of a shower, we would be in violation of the noise ordinance. We want to explore the opportunity of using, and as Mr. Kegler mentioned, we do have some adjacent property next to the parking lot. We would like to explore using that as overflow parking only. Obviously, when we did our site plan, our restaurant is going to be 3,000 square feet. We put more than enough parking in under the City of Savannah's zoning ordinance, but we do understand the concern from the county. And if there's open area that can be utilized, we are open to having that as overflow parking. It was simply the expense of coming in and the stormwater impact of coming in and paving that entire site we didn't think would be beneficial, but are open to exploring that opportunity. And so we did want to show you some of the renderings of this restaurant as it's currently proposed. I think that this applicant is in a unique position here that we are pretty far along. As a result of these neighborhood meetings, as a result of already owning the property, we were able to actually go ahead and put together renderings. At the neighborhood meeting, we heard concerns that this was going to function too much like a bar and not enough like a restaurant. So the owner went in and reduced the bar seating at the restaurant and added more tableside seating. So I think at every step of this process, we've been trying to listen to concerns. We know that we obviously can't address all concerns, but we are proud of this plan that we are presenting. And we do think that this will be in keeping with the criteria for a rezoning, that this will be a neighborhood amenity, and that the special use request as recommended by staff is warranted. And so as Ms. Leto mentioned, staff is recommending approval of both the rezoning and the special use application. We are happy to answer any questions that you may have on both, but do respectfully request that you recommend approval of the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yeller. Any questions for Mr.
And, I think what you have here is good. I just want to make sure that, over time, that area is getting utilized more and more by people trying to launch the boat. And we've had issues here in the past where, on a good sunny summer day, that's a lot of trailers, boat trailers being parked there. So I just want to make sure we don't have a conflict between the folks using the restaurant and the folks trying to park their trailers, trying to launch the boat from the boat ramp.
Yes, sir. And I think part of the issue also under the prior ownership with the county boat ramp, I think the prior owner did in fact put up gates or wires across the property because the people utilizing the county boat ramp were coming on to the private property and parking their trailers there. We're not trying to cause any conflicts with the county, but are, like we said, if there's a way for us to work together and try and get more parking in this area and solve the overflow parking, we are happy to do that.
I just see a conflict, waiting to happen. So I just want to make sure you're all aware.
Thank you. And if I made one additional point that came up during the neighborhood meeting, which we only partially addressed here, the house at the rear of the property, which was mentioned that it is slated for demolition, it's currently uninhabitable. There was concern from the residents and the adjacent residents that homeless population had taken up occupancy here. We are trying to address that and trying to do that in the best way possible. But there was some concern that we heard from neighbors that if this site remains vacant, that problem is not going to correct itself. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yeller. Any more questions for the petitioner? Mr. Yeller.
Yes, ma'am.
Beyond the property that is to be demolished, that's an existing residence?
Let me see if I can find a good image for you. But the answer is yes. On the other side, and I believe that was the resident who wrote the letter to Ms. Leto, and we've been in constant communication with her and her family, who I think they might have in fact operated Bell's Landing previously, I think it might have been the family business at one point. And so one of the concerns that came up from her letter specifically was related to the buffer that would be present between her home and this property. And Mr. Lotson was on that neighborhood meeting call, and we did our best to explain that as part of the site plan review process, because this would be a commercial use now adjacent to a residential use, that the city does in fact have very specific buffer requirements. I think it's a 25-foot vegetative buffer and a 6-foot fence, or heavily vegetated and without the fence. But we were willing to obviously adhere to that standard. And we do think that once that home is demolished and this area gets a little bit more of an enhanced buffer in accordance with the City of Savannah's ordinance, that will greatly mitigate any of the noise concerns. And related to that, if I may, she also brought up stormwater. And we fully believe that through the new site plan approval process, that by us coming in and redeveloping this site and adhering to what will be 2023 City of Savannah stormwater standards, it will vastly improve the runoff versus this site, which is simply a foundation with no trees and no on-site retention systems. And so we do think that the concerns from her letter will actually be alleviated by this project going forward. Thank you.
If nothing else for the petitioner, we'll now entertain public comment. And I have a speaker card from Ms. Christy Edenfield. We ask that you state your name for the record.
Good Yeah, my name is Christy Edenfield. Just because a restaurant was there previously does not mean it's a good idea now. It's zoned as a RSFE, and it should not change. A lot has changed since Bell's Landing on the River was burned down in a suspicious fire in 2006. There have been a lot of changes since then, including significant road deterioration, climate change, rising water and tides with our river and our marsh and a fragile ecosystem. County improvements to the boat landing has caused increase in trucks and boats being parked down both sides of Apache Avenue. Right now, we can't get a fire truck down the road when boat trailers are parked there on both sides. And Representative Ron Stevens stated that fact at our community meeting. An increase in vehicle accidents on Apache Avenue and Warlock Drive have been caused because of this, and a number of dog walkers have been nearly hit going up and down this road. Adding a bar, restaurant, and marina would only add an additional burden to this part of the city. Rezoning this parcel would cause undue burden to river houses at Bell's Landing. It would increase lower our property values. It would increase traffic on the river, which would put a burden on our dock. It would increase traffic on the roads and put a burden on our gated community. It would increase foot traffic and people walking into our gated community. While we only have 42 townhomes in our community, we have significant crime. In June, we had 34 911 calls, July 56, August 25, September 67, October 35 911 calls. We're averaging about 250 911 calls in the past 6 months. So that's about 500 a year in our small little 42 unit gatehouse, gated community. And Savannah Police Department are already overburdened by our small little community. Adding a bar marina would only add to the already high crime rates. Some people have memories of being able to stumble home after drinking at Bell's Landing. But for each person that stumbled home when there was a restaurant there before, there are hundreds more that are drunk driving. Other residents have memories of increased noise, light pollution, additional crime and fighting, people urinating in their yards, danger to pedestrians and dog walkers. We don't want to go back to that. It would cost the city over $1 million to widen that road and put a traffic light at Patching Avenue and Roger Warlick Drive. 12500 is zoned as RSFE property, and it should stay that way until the city can pay for the complete expensive infrastructure improvements that would be needed to accommodate a bar, restaurant, and marina. According to many national transportation and urban planning organizations, a road should be 10 feet wide, but 11 feet if there is delivery trucks, which would be needed to support a bar, restaurant, and a marina. An additional 7 to 9 feet should be added for side parking, which there are trucks and boat trailers parked up and down both sides. The average boat trailer is 8.5 feet, so we would need the 9 feet added. The typical U.S. residential street is 50 feet wide. Right now, the lanes, you can see how narrow these lanes are. Right now, the lanes are only 8 feet each. The city would need to widen the road by 12 feet on each side for the safety to support a bar, restaurant, and marina. It's currently 16 feet wide, and it would need to be 40 feet wide, which is still 10 feet less than your average U.S. road to support a traffic for a bar, restaurant, and marina. So the city would have to widen it by 24 to 34 feet.
Adam Phil, you're drawing near on your time.
Okay.
I can give you a couple, like one more minute, but
sure.
I just let you know you're drawing near on.
Oh, okay. Yes. To widen the road, you would need to cut down all of the trees along the marsh, move all of the electric poles, and fill the marsh and wetlands. It would cost the city well over $1 million, and it would cause irreparable harm to the ecosystem. If a bar, restaurant, and marina is built with the current road situation, it would cause traffic accidents, be a risk to pedestrians, bikers, dog walkers, students walking to Georgia Southern Armstrong campus, etc. For the safety of your constituents and the people of Savannah, I encourage you not to rezone this small piece of property for the use as a bar, restaurant, and marina. The city is not equipped to handle the traffic, crime, and that would result is from building a bar, restaurant, and marina. And per Representative Ron Stevens at the meeting with the developer, he stated that when boat trailers are parked on the road is not wide enough for a fire truck. God forbid that there be another fire in this location. Fire trucks would not be able to get to the bar, restaurant, and marina with the current road situation, and people would die.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Yes, sir. Once again, Josh Allen here today on behalf of the applicant to give a quick rebuttal to that. We did have our neighborhood meeting, and yes, there was opposition to it. The overwhelming majority of people who attended the neighborhood meetings were in support of this petition, believing that it would be an amenity to the community. Part of what we see time and time when we see these rezonings and these special uses, particularly when it comes to crime, is about a concept of eyes on the ground. And that, in fact, putting a restaurant here and having people coming and going does, in fact, deter crime. It's no longer a vacant lot where people can freely come and go and hide out at night in the dilapidated and abandoned home. It is a well-lit restaurant with security cameras and people present and people able to constantly keep eyes on the community. And from our perspective, we see that as a positive in a way that does bring crime down. This site has also, as stated, and I'll state once again, the future land use map designates this site as commercial, that the planners for the city of Savannah and Chatham County and MPC, when looking at this site, determined that neighborhood commercial was the appropriate designation for this site and should be the use of this site going forward from a policy standpoint. Some of the other concerns, unfortunately, are outside of our control. I can't control global warming through this restaurant. We can do the best that we can as part of this restaurant to make it an amenity for the community, to limit our hours, to limit our noise, and to make it a place that we're hopeful that everyone can enjoy and come to and will appreciate once it can get off the ground. And so thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Yeller. It will now enter board discussion.
I just have one question for staff. Do you know when the boat ramp area was improved?
No, for sure.
My slide disappeared. I don't know the exact date.
Was it post burn or pre burn?
Post.
Post.
Thank you.
Post restaurant.
Any other board members?
The one thing I would say to the person that got up to speak, from this picture, I don't see any no parking signs. So at the very least, I would reach out to the city if it's a city street and have them put those up, because then at least maybe they could start enforcing giving parking tickets along there.
Okay.
I had a question, or perhaps Mr. Cagler might be able to answer. Does the boat ramp keep particular hours? Is it closed after dark or anything?
That normally it's from dusk to dawn. From dawn to dusk, the boat ramp's open. It's just as indicated, after the restaurant burnt down and with the townhomes there, we got more and more people using it, and that's a real big issue. I think we are going to have some parking problems because people park on both sides of the street when it's crowded. So we are going to have those issues, we think, and it's going to have to be addressed. So giving out parking tickets probably is not the, that's.
Anything else? Were you clarifying the quiz question?
Sorry. Once again, we just want to affirm our commitment to working with the county. We know that because of the vacant site for so long, that people have taken advantage of the vacant land. And so we don't want to put that strain on everyone. Obviously, this project is going to take some time to build out. It's not a restaurant overnight. But we do want to commit to you and to the county and to the city that if there's something that we can do by way of overflow parking, we'll have our paved restaurant parking area, but if we need to work together to get people off the street and into a place that's a little safer for everyone, we're happy to do that.
All right, thank you. Okay. We've heard all testimony and comment. We'll entertain a motion. Would you all put staff recommendation up, please?
For the
And as Ms. Leto is looking for this, again, let's be reminded that the special use is contingent upon the approval of the rezoning. So we'll either way, we'll do one at a time, correct?
So for the rezoning, based upon the review criteria, staff recommends approval of the request to rezone from RSFE to BM. And for the special use?
One at a time.
Or should we just stop? Wait. Okay.
All right. So again, staff has recommended approval for the rezoning.
No one makes a recommendation or a motion to approve staff's recommendation for the rezoning.
Do I have a second?
Cole's second.
So we got a motion made by Mr. Noah and seconded by Mr. Cole.
And just for the record, sir, for everyone involved, this still has to go before the city council, and they will vote on it, yay or nay. So this is just one step in the process.
All right, so motions on the floor made by Mr. Coles, made by Mr. Noah, seconded by Mr. Coles for approval of the rezoning. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, hearing none, we'll go ahead into a vote. Ms. Bowles, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Ntrika?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. The motion carries and the project is approved. So now we'll go into the special use.
Staff recommends, based on the compatibility with the comprehensive plan and the ability to meet the criteria for a special use permit, staff recommends approval of the request with two conditions. One, the special use permit shall be non-transferable. Two, the special use permit shall be on premises alcohol only.
Noah makes motion to approve staff's recommendation with the two. My mind went blank. The two criteria that needs to be met.
Okay.
We have a second.
Why would he second?
Any discussion on the motion?
We were going to add some language about the conditions before it goes to city council or in front of city council regarding the neighborhood agreement.
We can amend it. We can amend the motion.
Wayne, are you able to offer
an amendment?
I will amend my motion that it contain the neighborhood agreement as well to go before city council.
Okay, do I have a second for the amendment?
Why would he second?
All right, we'll do a voice vote on the amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so now the new motion on the floor made by Mr. Noah and seconded by Mr. Wildwoody is to accept it, to approve the project as outlined in staff review, with the addition of the incorporating the neighborhood agreement that will be reviewed by city council. Any discussion on that motion? Okay, hearing none, we'll enter a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Ntrika?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. And the motion is, motion carries and the project is approved. Thank you. On you. I was waiting on you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just making sure we're ready to roll. So the next item on regular business is a petition, a subdivision petition for 241 Broadwater Lane. The petitioner is requesting a variance to allow the creation of one additional lot at this property. So this is a vicinity map to show the general area in which this property is located. The property, again, is 241 Broadwater Lane. This is a zoning map, and I wanted to show this because the reason we're here today is because the owner has proposed to subdivide the property into a 2-acre parcel that's highlighted here for the purpose of creating one additional residential parcel on this property. The overall site, which you don't see in this exhibit, but I'll show you here in just a second, is over 400 acres. The petitioner is proposing to divide 2 acres out of the overall parcel to create one more residence. On May 24th, a request was made by the petitioner to rezone this 2-acre portion of the property to the RA residential agricultural zoning classification with the intention of establishing that residence. The subject property had previously been used as part of a surface mining operation, which has since been closed out, which I'm going to talk about here a little bit in just a second. On April 19th, the owners received approval from the DNR to reclaim about 42 acres of that site, including the 2 acres in question from the surface mining operation, which would allow it to be used for residential purposes. And thus they filed the minor subdivision to create the 2-acre parcel that you see here on this map. In review of the subdivision request, it was determined that the number of existing lots, which are accessed by Broadwater Lane, which you see coming here, exceeded the number that's allowed by the county on an unimproved access. So currently, and this is the entrance to Broadwater Lane, Broadwater Lane is a 30-foot private vehicular access and utility easement, which grants access to the properties that are back here. This is a highlight of the overall parcel, much of which is wetland. You can see the general area in which the existing residences are on the upland here. Per section 601.02A design specifications for streets, it states that except as hereinafter provided, where a major subdivision abuts an unpaved street, which does not meet the design requirements of this chapter, the subdivider shall cause the street to be upgraded to meet the right-of-way drainage and surface condition requirements of this chapter. Essentially, what that means is that in the case of a major subdivision, which is 4 lots or more, then the applicant has to make the access consistent with the county standards. In this case, those standards would include a 20-foot paved access with appropriate stormwater conveyance, which is what would bring this property into compliance. Broadwater Lane, and I just want to clarify one thing. In the pre-meeting, we were having a discussion about private road versus right-of-way. Broadwater Lane is a private road. However, the county still has the authority to limit the subdivision of property on a private road if it does not meet the access requirements. But in terms of Broadwater Lane itself, the access road is approximately 3,600 linear feet from Highway 204 to the furthest residence, which is down here. Now, the proposed subdivision, which is closer to 204, is approximately 500 feet roughly away from the 204 intersection. The pending zoning action on this property was tabled by Chatham County until there can be a resolution of this variance issue in order to determine whether or not an additional lot will be allowed. This is the subdivision that was submitted for the 2-acre parcel. This is an aerial map of that portion that has had been cleared to accommodate that use. This is the overall parcel, and I wanted to show this because there has been some information that was provided by the applicant that I think they're going to talk about today, but I do want to go through with you a little bit. In March of this year, the applicant placed approximately 85% of the property that you see in front of you here, which is over 400 acres, into a perpetual conservation easement. That action would prohibit further development beyond what is here today and was proposed for that additional 2 acres. However, there are existing structures on this site that are accessed by an unpaved easement. A 2003 recorded plat, which was done by the previous owner, stated in the notes, and I'm pulling it up here for you, that no further subdivision of land shall occur until the access was improved to county standards. Let's see. So this is that recorded plat, and there's a note, which is number 8, that makes that statement regarding limiting the further subdivision of the parcel. Now, based on conversations with the applicant, it appears that the current owner was unaware of that information when they purchased the property. And I should also go back and let you know that the other lots that exist on here, these homes appear to have been started construction of the houses that are here in the 1990s. So that last subdivision I showed you, there hasn't been any real significant changes on these properties in a number of years. And this was recorded in 2003. The intent of this regulation, as we spoke about a little bit in the pre-meeting, is to ensure adequate access after development reaches a certain point. So it's been determined and codified in the regulations that that point is 4 or more residential lots. The ordinance does also state that variances to the standards must be justifiable. The regulations state that the Planning Commission may vary the standards in such cases where a peculiar shape or the topography of a tract of land or other unusual condition makes it impractical for a developer to comply with the literal interpretations of the design requirements. Such authorization is allowed as long as it does not violate the intent and purposes of the ordinance. From staff's review of that section, we find that there is not justification to permit the additional lot on this site. We find that the primary intent of the ordinance being related to safety is paramount here. That although there are existing residences that have used Broadwater Lane for many years to access their properties, allowing an additional lot here would not be consistent with the intent of the regulations. Based on those findings, staff is recommending denial of the request of the variance to allow the creation of one additional lot on an unpaved substandard access based on the finding in the staff report.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for staff? Okay, we'll hear from the petitioner. Please remember to state your name for the record.
Yeah, this is it. I'll make sure this is. Yeah.
We'll just go one by one. All right. For the record, my name is Stuart Wallace. I'm here on behalf of the petitioner, Twalene Hampton. Thank you for your time today, first and foremost. We're excited to be before you. We have the opportunity today to help a dedicated and caring mother in Twalene get one step closer to occupying her home here in Savannah. So there is a little bit of background here that I'll go into. Several years ago, Ms. Burnsid, who's joined us here today, Ms. Sandra Burnsid, She suggested that our client, Ms. Hampton, move her family from Tennessee down to Savannah. Ms. Burns had offered Ms. Hampton this 2-acre parcel that you guys see here today, which is along the banks of a pond formed out of a borrow pit on Ms. Burns's property, which Marcus is so eloquently framed for us. Ms. Hampton, who was expecting to occupy this land, made the move down to Savannah in reliance on that that promise. And in October of 2021, Ms. Hampton approached Chatham County to learn more about what would be required to actually subdivide the land and record the deed from Ms. Burns. Around that time, Scott Sellers at Chatham County, County Engineering told her to go ahead and file a subdivision petition with MPC. It was during engineering's review, initial review of that petition, that Ms. Hampton was made aware of that subdivision regulation that we're discussing today. This petition is a continuation of that petition, albeit in a roundabout way. Go ahead and get you. So that's the background. So as Harold Yellen, who was before you at one point on regarding this property, regarding rezoning of the property back in May, we're talking about three-step process, and he mentioned that in his speech. First, we were talking about closing the surface mine with Georgia DNR. Second, we were going to rezone the property from PDRSM to residential agricultural. And third, we were going to obtain subdivision approval. Step one was completed in April, as Marcus mentioned. We made strides towards completing step two in May of this year, as Marcus also mentioned, when this body approved our request for rezoning of the property, with MPC staff noting in that staff report that residential zoning will allow for the best use of the land, and it would lessen the impact of potential uses on the neighborhood, the county, and public services. After receiving that approval, we waited for several weeks to hear from Chatham County on our rezoning hearing. Of course, it was tabled. It was at that time that Chatham Engineering again brought up the subdivision regulation issue as it concerns the road. After much back and forth with their team and Chatham's assistant attorney's office, we were instructed that while a strict application of the regulation may appear harsh in this case, they felt that any deviation from that regulation should come in the form of a variance. It is for that reason that we stand before you today, again, and we were asked to be here. We're happy to be here, of course, and we believe a variance is appropriate in this case and are pleased to give the opportunity the opportunity to discuss exactly why. So hopefully that's easy enough to read, but our application and our request is based on four key considerations. The first being, and Marcus mentioned this already, the grant of approximately 414 acres of by Ms. Burnsid to the federal government for its conservation easement program, which makes the development of the land surrounding the property into a traditional residential subdivision, which I think is a concern based on the intent of that regulation, impractical or impossible. It prohibits structures from being built on the subject land, removing the development potential from a vast portion of Ms. Burnsid's land, and the staff report noted it's about 85% of that 400-plus acre parcel. Second, Ms. Hampton has heard no concerns about safety or navigability of that road from Chatham County, which instead referred us to MPC here for this variance as a matter of pro forma, is the way it was presented. And Ms. Burnsid has even heard from Chatham's employees, and Ms. Burnsid being the property owner for the surrounding parcel, has heard from Chatham's employees traveling up and down the road that the condition of the road poses no safety risk and can accommodate emergency services, which it has in the past year. Third, the nature and characteristics of this road and subdivision are not unlike those existing on other major subdivisions, rather, in Chatham County, namely Turner's Rock and Island Drive on Isle of Hope. And I've got Mr. Yellen here, Mr. Harold Yellen, who will discuss those in greater detail momentarily. Fourth and finally, with all the applications, legal fees, and local housing costs incurred by Ms. Hampton, she's simply unable to fund the improvements Chatham is asking her to make in this case. And based on a recent cost estimate, a quote that she received as recently as yesterday, we're looking at nearly $140,000 to pave this road to the county standard. If this petition is denied, Ms. Hampton will not be able to occupy the land gifted to her by Ms. Burnsid, and the family will continue to be without her home. We're hoping to give Ms. Hampton something to be happy about, as most people are this holiday, and we can't think of a better way to do it than to keep us on track towards finalizing the rezoning and subdivision of the land she was gifted by her friend roughly 16 months ago. At this time, while we still have time, I'd like to invite Mr. Yellen up here to discuss some of those similar use cases that we're talking about. and then we'll circle back up at the end.
Now, I just want to get clarification. Now, is Mr. Yellen speaking as a part of the petition? Or
is he is. He's
in favor. Speaker card, so I'm just trying to clarify.
He did.
I'm not exactly sure how you guys have structured the team. So, I mean, you guys still have time as a petitioner. Right. So,
yeah, so it's, yeah, he's part of the petitioner team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the record, Harold Yellen. Stuart asked me to come today to speak about two previous petitions, which in both cases, MPC staff recommended denial, and in both cases, the MPC approved a subdivision. The best way to describe it is under the ordinance, there's a subdivision ordinance that talks about four or more lots being a major subdivision, not a minor subdivision. That line could have been five, it could have been six, but under the county ordinance, it's four. So I was standing before you not very long ago. The property in front of you is at the end of Island Drive. In that particular case, they were looking to go from six lots to seven lots. Incidentally, we're going from five to six. This one was going from six to seven. And this is just the Sages map. And there is a very much a substandard road that runs through there. It is a tabby shell dirt road. There is no asphalt. There is no sidewalk. There's nothing of the sort. And this is what was approved. This is the subdivision plat for Island Drive at Isle of Hope, where given the facts and circumstances, there was not an issue. And you can see I highlighted the yellow where all streets rights of way are for the intended use of the owners of the two lot minor subdivision and the owners of the rest of the properties for a total of seven people on very much a substandard road. I also stood before Planning Commission for Turner's Rock and had to number these for you and for my recollection as well. There are 25 lots out there as you're riding out towards Wilmington Island off of Johnny Mercer. And one of the property owners also wanted to subdivide there. And in that particular case, well, here's the aerial. You can sort of see through the aerial, the road bleeding through. I've been on that road. Maybe you've been on that road too. Probably even if you can say something is more substandard or less substandard, it's an even worse road than Isle of Hope. Yet there was not an issue with this particular body stepping up and saying there's no harm in having this subdivision done. And you can see perhaps here the what's bleeding through is the gravel road that's underneath the trees. And so I bring these to your attention. The only thing that I would take issue with in the presentation by my associate, Sir Wallace, I was recently at a meeting with engineers who tell me in today's world of product and availability, it's now $800 per linear foot. So I think the dollar amount is $400,000, not $150,000. It would cost $400,000 to build a road to county spec for the privilege of having one more lot. And I think as Stuart presented to you, because so much of this land has already been given away for conservation, the likelihood that this could ever become Isle of Hope or ever become even Turner's Rock, it's just not out here. So we know we have to go through this process. We understand why staff's recommending denial based on the ordinance, but we think if ever there's a case for a variance to be warranted, this is the case. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And to the extent that we have more time, I wanted to invite Sandra Burnsid, who is actually...
She's got a public speaker card, okay. So I'll allow for that.
Okay, perfect. I was going to have her speak for a moment. She actually lives out on the property to this day. She can speak to the number of residents that are actually out there, that are out there. I know that it was something in the staff report that came up in terms of potential vehicular travel and everything.
So All right. Thank you. One moment, Ms. Mercer. Are there any questions for the petitioner? Mr. Noah?
Well, it can be for the petitioner or staff. Has there been any communication with emergency services about this gaining access down this dirt road?
There's no, we haven't had any.
We got to go to the microphone, please. Thank you.
We haven't had any formal correspondence with emergency services, but Sandra Burnside behind me can actually speak to that. She's, as she still lives out there, she's received emergency services out in that direction and can speak to the notes that they've given her as they've come out there. That's helpful in any way.
Thank you. Okay. Anything further for the petitioner? All right, thank you.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and allow for you to speak, Ms. Burnside. And if you would, state your name for the record.
Yes, Sandra Burnside.
All right.
This land's been in my family since the late 1800s. I inherited it from my...
You had a little closer to the mic for me, please. Thank you.
This land's been in my family since the late 1800s. It's the same original roads. We've never had no issues with them. John Glover, a good friend of mine with the county, their county line runs on our property as well. And he states to me that my road is better in better shape than their dirt road that runs on the county. And all I gave my best friend, Twalene, 2 acres of land, gift deeded, so we could be here as a family because we've been family, growed up together all of our lives. And I wanted her here because she has elderly parents. She'll be home with them to take care of them and stuff and all. And as the residents, they were stating all these things. They count my plot as two places. One is a lake, so they're saying that's a plot. My homestead, that's a plot. My cousin Gary in the back, he was gifted the land as well from Mom, and Mom's the one that signed that paper, the plat y'all was talking about back in 2000 or whenever, and all. And he also purchased 7 acres from Mom. So therefore, they're saying that's 4 people living there. And we also have the Ragusos that has less than an acre. So there's only actually 3 houses have ever been on this property up until they gave Miss Hampton the permit to move her stuff in, and then after we got it moved in, revoked it. If there's anything y'all want to ask me, that as for the emergency services, we have never had no issues. They come, I have 7 ponds total on all the acres. They come out, they get water to go put out fires and all that. The station 12, which is less than 1/4 mile from my house, we donated them the property land to put the substation up there. We've had river rescues where they've come in with 5 and 6 fire trucks plus EMS and auto rescue teams, and with no problem having in and out access. Yes, there's one way in and one way out, but I do take care of the road personally because it is a private road. We always have. We've maintained it. We have a motor grader. We have a tractor. And like I said, my friend stated, my road's in better shape than what the county's road is in. So if that's an issue, and it's been here since the 1800s, I don't know what else to say.
All right. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions for me towards any of this? I can try to answer.
Looks like we may be good at this time. Like, I'm going to allow for a couple of other individuals that have submitted speaker cards to submit their comment as well. And that is Ms. Tammy, you say Twalene? Is that how you say it? Twalene Hampton.
And this is the petitioner.
All right, thank you. And please state your name for the record.
My name is Tammy Twalene Hampton.
Come to the mic a little bit. Thank you.
My name is Tammy Twalene Hampton. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I am the woman that has been irritating you for quite a while about some property. My best friend Sandy gave me property so I could move it. Excuse me. So I could move down here and be close to my parents. I have 3 kids, grandchildren, that I am raising. Sold my house in Tennessee, moved down here, put a double wide trailer big enough for all of us on it, thinking I was going to be able to spend the rest of my life down here. If I didn't know that it was going to turn into this, I would never have done it. I would have bought a house somewhere else. but I didn't. I came to Chatham County. I've got a beautiful home. I just can't live in it. My children can't live in it. We have been homeless, pretty much. We don't have our own home, but we have been homeless. And sorry I'm so upset, but it bothers me. For 16 months now, we are living with my parents in their 1,200 square foot house. Mind you, I have three kids. I had a husband. He's gone now because of all this. He couldn't do it. And if you guys can't help me with this, I'm stuck with property and a house that I can't do anything with but look at. That was our home. My kids were looking forward to living there next to their Aunt Sandy, spending time with their cousins, being able to go four-wheeling, just being kids. And now it's up to you guys to decide if they get to do that, because I've done everything I can possibly do, and I apologize for crying, but this is all I can do. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have a question for someone, whoever can answer it. When would, and if I missed it, I'm sorry. When was the mobile home placed on the property?
Around October 2021, which is about the time that.
And was there a permit?
There was a permit issue, and then and subsequently revoked.
Say that again.
There was a permit originally issued and then subsequently revoked by Chatham County after they, I think, did additional digging on this issue.
Now I have a couple of comments. How of the, there seems to be some question about the actual number of homes. Are any of those lots that you described, do any of them have the same ownership? Or are they all separate?
No, it has one.
Yeah, you can stay up here with me.
And state your name for the record.
Sandra Burnson.
Thank you.
My cousin inherited, my mother gift-deeded one of my cousin, which is Gary Douglas. He and I shared the road rights together, and we both signed off for Twalene to have access to her home. Others, the Ragusos, they moved away and then moved back from Florida because they had a death in the family, and it's my residence. There's only three dwellings, and Twalene's made the fourth one.
Thank you for that clarification.
And we've been there since I moved there in 2000. I'm the last home that was there. The Gary and the Ragusas have been there since the early 80s. So that's the only thing. And like I say, I have the conservation. And I'm looking at, this was my grandpa and my family's heritage. I don't want no subdivision. I don't want to lose the land. I want it to be developed where, not developed, but to where family and friends can come out and enjoy a place where there's not a million houses and everything, and it's back to its natural habitat, and it can never, it's grandfathered in. Even if I sell the land, it's grandfathered in. No one can ever develop this through the federal government.
That take care of your question.
Four houses, if y'all will allow my sister to live there with me.
The other question is might be for members of the board or the MPC staff. Is there any other reason other than emergency access for that condition?
Ms. Epstein, I think that's the primary reason that the that portion of the ordinance exists, is for access just for residents as well as for emergency services.
Done.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Coles.
I have a question. If this variance were granted, is there a way to put an end stop on this so that 30 years from now somebody can't say, well, we just added one more? You know, is there a way to include that in a variance grant?
Well, honestly, Mr. Coles, I think that's where we are today, is that it has been stopped through legal documents, the plat that I showed you earlier. Which there was a notation saying no more subdivision. Now, the variance process exists for boards to hear cases like this. So could somebody come back next year or 20 years from now and ask for another variance? Sure. But it would be up to a board to make that determination. I don't believe there's any way to more strongly restrict additional lots than what's already been done in terms of making a notation on the plat, but that doesn't prohibit a future petitioner from requesting a variance to that. Now, let me also say this. I think some of the actions that have taken place by the property owner in terms of the conservation easement and things of that nature will probably be a limiting factor as well that didn't exist before, I guess, earlier this year. So I think there's more in place today than was in place in 03 when the last subdivision was done out here.
And I guess what I'm pushing for is this being a recorded and very public session, mm-hmm. as opposed to being a note on a plat.
Right.
I think that the next time that this would be revisited, there is an actual audio recording of this conversation happening.
Right. Right.
So that hopefully we could clarify that this is the very last.
And I mean, I think that should the board or someone on the board make a motion to allow the variance, perhaps there is language within that that states the board's position today very strongly. I think that's the best that could be done in a circumstance like that.
Excuse me, but the other, Melanie Wilson, Executive Director, the other thing that can be done and actually should be done is if you all approve this, then on the plat, there needs to be another note written regarding future subdivision of the property. Because this is a recorded document, so it's a legal document that they're asking you to vary from. So all of that has to be updated.
Yes.
If they are granted this variance, and you can be very explicit or make it very explicit on that plat as well regarding any future subdivisions. And the conservation area helps. That's something that should be identified on the new recorded plat. And we need to make sure that we are looking at that so that all of that is included. But that will help a lot with regards to limiting future activity on this property. And the road needs to be identified too. I know that when we looked at that, that was one of the issues that came up with regards to maintenance, like who takes care of it if something happens to the primary property owner that's doing maintenance. So the applicants might want to have some agreements that they have recorded regarding who's going to be responsible for sharing in the cost of the road improvements. And maybe there's something that can be done to widen the road so that you've got at least I think right now it's 10 feet wide?
It's 20 feet wide.
20 feet wide to help make sure that that's kind of approved so that there is the ability for emergency vehicles to go out so that, you know, there's some type of agreement. But those are things that really need to happen. And those are things that we did not find when we start looking into this that need to be in place.
Mr. Coles made a good point when we were talking about, almost kind of like the liability of it. And I just want to state for the record that the petitioner completely and fully understands in the event that the variance is granted and emergency vehicles can't get back there the way they probably should, that you guys are wholeheartedly understanding of the liability that you're assuming for the individuals that are back there that may not get a timely enough response due to potential road conditions. And I just wanted to state that just so you guys are having that in mind. Mr. Noah,
For staff, what is the current zoning?
The current zoning is PDRSM, and that's related to the surface mine operation that was on this site.
But
the zoning change to that's pending this action is residential agriculture, which would permit single family residential.
Would that also permit a hardship mobile home case on one parcel of property?
It certainly could if approved by the commission.
So
the county commission, I should say.
Right, just a simple hardship case to place an additional mobile home on the one larger piece of property that is owned by the petitioner.
Yes, and let me say this. That can be done. I do not know the specifics of the hardship cases, so I don't want to suggest today that you know, that's something that will be done or what the conditions are, but yes.
That is an avenue.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Kegler.
But Mr. Noah, just for clarification, just know that if that is something that's pursued, that's not something that technically it's supposed to be permanent from the standpoint of how that's placed. It's for, you know, medical as well as other types of hardships along those lines, and it's supposed to be something that can be removed once that situation has been resolved.
But an additional mobile home could be placed on the single piece of property.
No mobile home could be placed, though. Well, let me say this. The property could be subdivided, which is what they're proposing, to create a lot. And under the pending zoning, a mobile home could be permitted on that property.
So not two?
No. It's not zoned for multiple mobile homes.
Mr. Kegler.
My question, I think on a previous slide, most of that property was wet.
A lot of it is wet.
So my question is, how many, there's not going to be room to subdivide it any further, is what I understand. I think this is probably going to max it out based on the amount of uplands that's on that parcel.
Yeah, the upland is limited, and as Mr. Wallace indicated earlier, there is now a conservation easement on the lion's share of the property that exists now.
But we're almost limiting, I think this is as far as they can go. I don't think they can get anything else on here if this is approved.
And keep in mind that even if they wanted to, they would have to come back to this body to start that process again if 5 years from now somebody said, oh, I want to get one more lot on this land.
Mr. Wildwood.
I think on the recorded plat that I saw under right above where it said it couldn't be done unless the road was improved, that all of the owners out there are jointly required to maintain the roads.
I think that's
somewhere in there, yeah.
In the notes here. So.
Private vehicular access utility easement shall be for the use of the maintained by the owners of the land, not just Ms. Burnstead. So all parties would have to maintain it. Not so if something happens to Ms. Burnstead, everybody else has to maintain it. She just
yeah, that's no number right seven now, on the plat for those who are not looking at this.
The other thing was, did I hear correctly that merchant vehicles are already using this property, these roads?
Yes, that is correct. And actually, Ms. Burns had just made us aware of a situation where I think
the fire trucks are using it for water.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fire trucks are able to passively go through. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right. Ms. Bowles. Oh, sorry about that.
Could you finish that statement? You said she made you aware of.
Just a circumstance in the last calendar year that I think you said seven total fire trucks were able to passively make it in and make it out timely.
My question was related to the county's question about the balance, the 15% that's not under conservation. How much is actually left? What's developable? So Mr. Lutzen mentioned that some was wetlands and what have you, but so just to be clear about how much is actually left and able to be developed. And is this, if this grant variance was granted, could this possibly be the last time? Just to get some numbers from you.
Right. And in terms of the actual upland acreage, I don't know that we have a final exact calculation of the remaining, but this was intended to be illustrative. This green swath right here, this is all that was granted to that easement or to the easement program. So all of this right here is now included. The only thing, and you can see I've labeled the property right here on that embank or on the pond. You got some additional wetlands here. I mean, it's really limited to this little section here. And as Mr. Lotson mentioned, and as discussed, granting a variance here would still mean that the next petitioner would have to come here and seek your approval again. So by granting it today, you're not opening the floodgates for additional subdivision. You're just once again, pushing it to the next subdivider, which you can, you know, either approve or deny at that stage.
All right, any further? Thank you, Mr. Wallace. No, I'm assuming that this was Mr. Wallace. I can't make out the first name.
Yes, yes, Stuart Wallace.
I thought so. Yeah. I thought it said Stuart, but I wasn't sure.
No, that's okay.
All right, thanks. No, I think that's it.
All right.
Okay, thank you, sir. All right, if there's no more questions or discussion, we'll entertain a motion.
Coles, I make a motion that we approve the petitioner's request for a variance with the stipulation that it will be notated on the plat that no further subdivisions, once again, shall happen until the road is improved beyond this one variance.
Jeff Petrick, I'll second that.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, hearing none, we'll enter a vote. Ms. Bowles?
No.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mrs. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
I vote yes as well. Petition is approved. Thank you. All right, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, and that is the rezoning map amendment of Zero Marydale Drive, rezoned from RSF 6 to OI-E, and that petition number is 22-005457.
Mr. Chair, because I do some contract work for Country Day School, I'm going to recuse myself.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This item on regular business is a rezoning request. The petitioner representing Savannah Country Day School is requesting to rezone the subject property from RSF 6, which is residential single family, to the office institutional extended zoning classification. That's the same classification as the school campus. The property, which you see highlighted here, is adjacent to the Savannah Country Day School campus. The school intends to purchase the property from the current owners and combine it into the overall campus property, which you see adjacent to the subject property. Property is at the intersection of Cedar Grove Road and Marydale Drive. Marydale Drive and Cedar Grove Road are local streets which grant access to the single family residential community that is immediately east of the school's campus. The applicant held a public meeting, neighborhood meeting on November 14th with members of the association to discuss the proposed rezoning, as well as the school's overall master plan and plans to make changes to the vehicular circulation around the neighborhood and the school. This is a zoning map that shows the RSF 6 zoning adjacent to the school property, which is in the OIE zoning. And in this aerial map, you can see the school campus and the current, so the subject property, which is currently undeveloped. It's a wooded vacant lot. The school takes its primary access from Stillwood Drive, which is located here. Where there is a controlled access point in the school. There's also a gated entry along Cedar Grove Road, which gives a secondary access to the school. One of the issues or the reasons that the petitioner is requesting this rezoning, again, to acquire this property, to add it to the overall campus, but in doing so, to close off the entrance to Cedar Grove Road that enters into the school. And I want to show you that this is Cedar Grove Road, looking toward the entrance of the school. This is a closer photograph at the intersection of Cedar Grove and Marydale here. Straight ahead is the access to the campus, which is gated. And this is the subject site, a wooded lot. The school campus was established in 1955, began to be established in 1955, probably a better way to put that. And the residential neighborhood around it developed around the school years later. The immediately adjacent developments include a congregate care facility and outdoor recreation facilities associated with the school. This is an exhibit that shows the school's sort of working master plan for the campus. Here you'll see Stillwood Drive out here to the left of the screen, and then Cedar Grove comes into the property right along here. The subject property, which is generally in this location, is shown as being, you know, brought into the school's campus. And one of the things that they want to do is create a new access point to take traffic off of Cedar Grove and onto a new private drive that would intersect with White Bluff Road, adjacent to the congregate care facility that you see located here. I do want to add that we received, or staff received, between the pre-meeting and the regular meeting, a petition from members of the adjoining neighborhoods. And I just want to read this for the record, since it was not attached to the agenda. We just received it. It states, we, the undersigned, are concerned citizens who urge our leaders to act now to not allow the residential rezoning to OIE, Savannah Country Day School. They have 65 acres. They would want to turn the lot into part of the lower school or a maintenance yard. We were okay for them to rezone their current acreage, and they terminated the contract to purchase the lot from Nicholson Borough Baptist via Edgar Sams in 2020. Mr. and Mrs. James Williams bought the property in September 2021 and then sold it to SCDS this year. There was a meeting about what was going to be done, and now they want to rezone again. The undersigned include 68 names, addresses, and dates for signature, and we'll add that to the record. I just wanted to put that on the record. We just received it this afternoon.
Could I ask a quick question? Could you go back to that before we move on?
Mm-hmm. To
the master plan.
Okay.
The road that you pointed to along Heritage Park does not exist today.
Correct. So that would be a private driveway that would intersect with White Bluff
and
Road
take all the of their traffic off of city streets, if you will.
Yes.
Cedar Grove and Wellwood and all that other stuff.
Correct.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I was clear.
And I'll just wrap up with our findings, Mr. Chairman. You know, reviewing the criteria for rezoning, in terms of the reasonable use of the property, we think that the location is, although usable for single family, is probably a little less desirable than some of the others in the area, because of the adjacency to this current school's entrance. Other non-residential uses are unlikely to develop on that property as it exists now, just due to the size of it. It's inadequate for a standalone non-residential use. We think it's too small to accommodate that. As was mentioned in the petition, in 2020, the applicant sought rezoning of the school campus to the current OIE zoning. The MPC recommended approval, and the mayor and alderman adopted the change. The school was previously zoned RSF6, as it had existed prior to zoning in Savannah. The OIE district has also been applied to other neighborhood private schools, including Benedictine Military School, Go Champs, Memorial Day School, and Calvary Day School. We think the subject property is unique in the neighborhood and could likely serve either a residential or an institutional use. However, based on the size and location of the property, staff finds that the highest and best use is likely in association with the school campus. As a land use matter, the property has never been developed. It has not been deemed feasible to construct single-family residential over these years. And we don't believe it's appropriate for a standalone non-residential use with frontage on Marydale Drive and Cedar Grove. With rezoning and incorporation into the campus, it can become an asset and an improvement, we feel, for the neighborhood as it relates to the traffic circulation pattern. Based on these findings, we're recommending approval to rezone the property with the conditions that the subject property be recombined with the school campus prior to approval of a development plan, and that the proposed access identified on the school's master plan be approved by the City of Savannah traffic engineer. And that's specific to the White Bluff to the property intersecting with White Bluff at this location. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. The petitioner's agent is also present to answer questions.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? Thank you, Mr. Thank Martin. You. Now from the petitioner.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Once again, Josh Allen representing the Savannah Country Day School. With us today, we have the head of school, Kef Wilson, along with Elizabeth Schminke from Hussey Gay Bell, who is the architect working on this project. And part of what we are trying to achieve here is kind of a split process, which makes this site unique, both in terms of the fact that it's an existing campus with existing constraints that predates the neighborhood, which now surrounds it. And we're all trying to find a way to squeeze this into the site that we have. But when an opportunity like this does present itself in terms of acquiring the adjacent parcel that is vacant, it was in the school's obvious best interest to try and figure out a way to bring this into the campus and bring it into the master plan. And I do think that master plan is very important. For those of you that were on the board when we had this property rezoned in 2020, I want to say it was right before COVID started, maybe one of the last hearings before COVID. Part of the consideration for this rezoning, both from this board and from City Council, was that the school goes out and develops a master plan, that for so long they had been operating in this kind of bubble without connectivity to the surrounding areas, without letting neighbors know what was going on. And so this campus plan, this master plan that you're seeing, is a result of the prior rezoning, so that we can go out and discuss the campus, discuss the limitations that we have, and try and find a way to make everything work. And so what's unique about this campus plan and might be missing from some of the discussion is that when you zoom in on some of these, a lot of these improvements are labeled as new. In order to make this property work, in order to design a space and to close off that drive, which we know has been causing some issues, there is a realignment internally of the campus. It's not just, okay, let's close it off, let's see what we can do. There's a lot of moving pieces that go into it that we're all trying to make happen. And unlike, I would say, the public schools in the city, we do have to abide by the ordinances of the City of Savannah and by Chatham County. We can't just go out and build and say, hey, you know, we're exempt. If it causes traffic problems, we're exempt. I send my daughter, she goes to Charles Ellis. I hear complaints and my Facebook is blowing up all the time about neighbors complaining about traffic impacts and people parking in their yard and queuing up for pickups and queuing up for drop-offs. And I know that doesn't make everyone on this board happy. But at least here, we have the opportunity to try and address these concerns. And the opportunity here was through purchasing this adjacent lot, which, as Mr. Lotson mentioned, had remained vacant. Country Day, for background, they were under contract to purchase this property previously when we were before you. Because this board recommended that we not go through with it at the time, we dropped it. But it turned out that it came back. And part of the reason that no one could develop this site for so long, and part of the reason why Country Day was in a unique position to, in fact, purchase and develop this site, is that for over, I think, 150 years, it was deeded to the Nicholson Borough Baptist Church. Somehow the county records had it labeled as a cemetery. So anyone looking at this site was under the assumption that it was a cemetery. Upon our advice, Country Day went out and actually spent the money and did the due diligence to ensure that it was never used as a cemetery. There was ground penetrating radar, there was archaeological visits, there was significant research and significant costs that went in to ensure that we were not intruding upon what should be a sacred site. But that's part of the reason why this opportunity exists that I want to make clear before this board. And so as Mr. Lotson mentioned, while today's rezoning is to go from the RSF 6 to the OIE, which in a nutshell might be one thing, we are trying to look at this holistically as a way that we think can better the greater neighborhood by taking some of the traffic off of these streets where we know it's an issue, and then building this much larger entrance down here. And the second factor that's limiting here, other than the existing campus, which predates the neighborhood, is in fact some of the limitations of NUZO, where frankly, I think this site was not looked at when the rezonings were happening. When we came in to do the OIE, we're really just doing some zoning cleanup. But we do think that this OIE zoning designation, that bringing this site into the campus master plan, which then restricts its use to school purposes, is a great great process for the neighborhood. And we do think it will alleviate some of the concerns. And so we are happy to answer questions that you may have, but we are trying to look at this from a big picture standpoint in terms of the traffic impact on the area. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yellen. Any questions for the petitioner? Okay. Now we'll entertain public comment, and the first comment is from John/Marla Perry. I ask that you state your name for the record.
My name is John Perry. I live at 58 Marydell Drive, which is right next to this, and I want to kind of add a few things. I'm the one that went out and collected the signatures. I collected 68 signatures. That's 100% response rate from every single person I was able to make contact with in just about a three-day period. I think it's right about 50% of the neighborhood. 100% of the people are like, no, no way. Because we have a history. And this board approved the sale of a part of Cedar Bay, or not Cedar Bay, I'm sorry, of Cedar Grove on October 4th, 1985 to Savannah Country Day. And I realize it predates everything. Anybody here today? We were 100% in favor of the rezoning in 2020 as long as this portion was not included, because we understand what's already happened. And I understand them wanting to get as much out of their property, but there's still history there, because on October 4th, 1985, the board approved the sale of part of Cedar Grove. The contingency that the written in the record was that the neighborhood kids would forever, as long as they both exist, the neighborhood and the campus, would be able to use that as a walkthrough. Because when that happened, we lost one of our access points in the neighborhood. We're down to one access point. Now we have two roads, but they're 50 feet apart, 100 feet apart. So we have essentially one access point at White Bluff Road. But my wife, who was born and raised and grew up in the neighborhood, one time went to go visit her grandmother who lived in the neighborhood, and she walked through. There was no gate. She came back home. There's a gate. And from then on, when any other neighborhood kids wanted to go someplace, they literally had to crawl through this gate that wasn't even supposed to be there. So we have this history, and people in the neighborhood, they're right. It's the neighborhood grew up around it. Yeah, and it's still there. The people there are generational homes. It's not just single family. We have about a quarter of the places are rentals now. But even those rentals are owned by people who grew up in the neighborhood. And so there's a very strong sentiment of remembering, you know, this is not a good, you know, not them personally, but it's not been a great relationship to be right next to Savannah Country Day, especially two times a day when school's in session, because Cedar Grove Road is impassable. You know, we just had this thing where the lady moving down from Tennessee, they're worried about emergency vehicles and how that was a big. Try coming down Cedar Grove twice a day. If you're worried about emergency vehicles, my goodness, it's lined. People can't get in and out of their own homes. One of the big contingents about this is they keep talking about, well, this is going to improve traffic. This is going to improve traffic. They're not contingent upon each other. Look at the map yourself. Look, they own that land already that goes to White Bluff Road. But so the use of this land is not contingent upon building the road that access White Bluff. Instead, what they're doing is pushing further into the neighborhood. And one thing that I noticed, it wasn't mentioned what was going to be used for. There are two things. One is potentially be a daycare if they're able to purchase even more property, or a maintenance yard. I'm really excited about having a maintenance yard in my backyard. I already hear the blowers every morning at 6 a.m. They blow off, you know, go out there, woo, and you hear it. You think living next to a leaf blower is bad? Imagine having one of those giant ones that they drive around, it sounds like, going off at 6 a.m. every morning because they got to blow the parking lot. It's pushing into the neighborhood. And this is the death by a thousand cuts. In 1985, it took a little slice. The kids lost the ability to go walk around and have connection to other neighborhoods. We have no connection to any other neighborhood. There's fences all around us already. And so now here we are, more another slice just being taken off. And one of the number one things I'm ran into, everybody's afraid of, they're going to want more land. This has been going on for years now. They're going to want more land. They're going to want more land. They're going to buy my house. I understand them trying to get as much out of their land as possible. I totally get that. But coming into a neighborhood when it's unnecessary to close off that road, which seems to be the number one selling point, is we're going to fix the traffic. Cool, fix the traffic. You don't need to come in the neighborhood to fix the traffic.
Thank you. Oh, I actually have a question, but I think it's going to be Ms. Schmincke. You'll probably be able to answer it. Ms. Schmincke, please state your name for the record.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Schmincke. I'm the architect on the project.
No, you can submit your comment and I'll ask my question.
No, I didn't have a comment. Here for answering questions. Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you had a question.
My question is, I'm trying to make sure I'm understanding the layout and the graphic correctly. So with this parcel, does that indeed impede Cedar Grove and cut off? Because how I originally read it is that parcel was off to the side and did not impede the street. And you were basically internalizing the traffic by closing off that gate back there. So they will still have access to Cedar Grove that wraps around to the other street. Am I incorrect in that?
Let me make sure I understand the question. One of the main reasons and one of the components of this master plan was to try and alleviate the burden that Cedar Grove carries as our neighborhood addressed. And so what this parcel enabled us to do was reroute the traffic through a new road on that connects to White Bluff. So as the way we could achieve that was kind of gaining back some land here so that we could reallocate some of the functions that currently operate. So some of these elements over here need to kind of be shifted. That is not currently a road right now. There are some aspects of their athletic program and other maintenance equipment that currently occupy that extension. And so in some of this reallocation of space and this use over here and in this new parcel, that would enable us to connect to White Bluff and thereby eliminating the load currently burdening Cedar Grove.
I get that part. I guess my question was more directed towards the new maintenance building and yard. Is that parcel the parcel that would potentially obstruct traffic flow around that backside on Cedar Grove and I think what's the other street name? Wellward, Marydale, and Marydale? Because it seems as if originally those streets kind of made it like a little U, boomerang, if you will.
Right here. Are we saying
if you would move your cursor further up?
The Cedar Grove. Sure. Yeah, come on up and help.
So, Mr. Chair, there's currently city right-of-way right here. So through the acquisition of this property, and I think conversations are already underway with the city of Savannah in terms of acquiring this portion, which will no longer be necessary for the city of Savannah to use and maintain. It would be surplus property. We could then close off the road so that the circulation would just be through Marydale and close off this portion right here of Cedar Grove.
That's what I was trying to clarify.
Right. So the acquisition of the property was in furtherance of closing city right of way, mm-hmm. which we could not do otherwise.
All right, thank you for that clarification. Any more questions for Ms. Schminke or anyone? Would you guys like to respond to the public comment?
Yes, sir. Once again, Josh Yellen, and part of, and I sound like a broken record, but part of the reason for this rezoning is that the current classifications and current use designations under NUZO would not allow a true use of this site. And so we're here to ask for the rezoning that even if it's a little school, a daycare, a maintenance shed, the use of the property by Country Day necessitates the rezoning. And it's all kind of a ripple effect that we have to pick our starting point somewhere for trying to get the traffic off the roads into the neighborhood. So property has been acquired. We need to rezone the property. We need to work with the city on the surplus property acquisition. And in fact, the conditions that Mr. Lotson outlined, we need to work with the city of Savannah traffic engineers to then ensure that this access point can meet city standards. It's all part of the steps that we're taking to make sure that we can be a better neighbor and not repeat the unfortunate mistakes that happened in 1985, long before that either myself or Ms. Schminke or Mr. Wilson were involved. But we are trying to correct some of those mistakes and trying to be more open and transparent, trying to present the master plan, but do need to start somewhere. And in fact, as for Country Day, as an institution, as a school, as a nonprofit, these things take time, but we need to start now so that we can start alleviating the pressures. So
I'm assuming that with you guys getting with traffic engineering, that you will be pushing for, if this is approved, for that White Bluff access to be signalized.
I'm not sure if we would necessarily be pushing for it, but those conversations have started, okay. And that's definitely an item that is on the table to explore the signalization of that intersection. Probably not the one to talk about it, but there is an existing right of way on the opposite side of White Bluff, and this was actually planned to align with Vernonburg Road, which is directly across the street. And so that was anticipated in terms of how to best address that concern.
All right, thank you. Mr. Wildwoody.
I see a lot of dominoes that need to fall here. The first domino is this piece of land, then the rezoning, then the acquisition of the property of the surplus road, then the creation of, or well, clearing of that column of land there so you can reallocate it, then paving it, and then getting a right of way on to White Bluff.
Yes.
And those are all the dominoes that have to fall.
Yes, sir. And I guess the unfortunate reality of those dominoes is that it's not prudent for Country Day to even explore this access drive until we know that we can start moving the encumbrances that are on it to another portion of the campus.
I mean, is there any assurance that you can provide to anybody that if this first domino does fall and we actually have factual acquisition of this rezoning and taking of that sliver, that the remaining dominoes will fall?
We are going to,
or we just don't grab that land and get that unused road and then abandon everything else.
No, and from my understanding, we've already started the conversations with the city regarding acquiring that right of way for surplus property.
Okay.
Is that all for the petitioner? Unfortunately, Mr. Perry, we can't allow for any more public comment.
What about when there's lies?
We can't allow for any further public comment, Mr. Perry. Ms. Bowles. Is this for Mr. Yellen?
Or the architect.
Okay, or Ms. Schminke, one of the two.
Could someone outline for me the current traffic pattern before the purchase of this property? For the new site we're talking about.
Is that helpful? What's on your screen now? Or do you mean the internal traffic pattern?
Right. Could you then show me where the new road would be on the site?
The Heritage Drive.
Yeah, Heritage Park Drive does not actually exist.
Okay, got you.
It's shown on Sages as a private drive for the Pruitt Health Facility, but it's not actually a right-of-way, and there's no improvement there. So this would be lining up with Vernonburg, heading in this direction. Let me see if there's a...
Yeah, I was trying to see on the previous illustration. Yeah.
And I can go to the master plan for you.
Yes. So the current traffic pattern would be...
And so the current traffic pattern, there is access coming in from Marydale with the gate here that services Country Day. And so the intent of this is to close that portion of the right-of-way so that traffic will circulate through White Bluff and use this existing main gate for the site as well, which is already in effect.
I'm sorry, what happens to that traffic on, is that Merrill that goes?
Let's see if I can go back. So it would still circulate through Cedar Grove.
Okay, that's what I was asking.
It would still have complete connectivity.
Mr. Noah. Ms. Boswell, are you done? Yeah, and that's, hold on, Mr. Noah.
This photo might help. This is the intersection of Cedar Grove and Marydale as it enters the school campus here. This is Cedar Grove. So the current traffic pattern would continue to loop around Cedar Grove to Marydale here. So that would remain open. Everything from this point toward the school would then be closed.
For vehicular traffic.
For vehicular traffic, right.
Thank you.
That's what I was also trying to clarify a little bit earlier, just seeing if that boomerang, if you will, still offered vehicular connectivity. Okay. Mr. Noah.
This, I guess, would be a question for the neighbor who lived, if I'm able to ask. One of the major concerns that I heard repeated more than once was traffic, not being able to get in and out of driveways, et cetera. This is a large school, and I can assume that there's queuing of vehicles down Cedar Grove. Is there also queuing of vehicles on Marydale? So, I'm
understanding this interior road would remove that queuing.
No. I'm stating currently, right now.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay.
You're asking if there's queuing here?
Yes.
That's Marydale.
Right.
Okay.
So I'll let
the gentleman answer that question.
Hold on 1 second, please. Yes, if sir. There's current queuing down Cedar Grove and Marydale, and maybe even that other cut through, because you got to get a lot of cars off of White Bluff to queue up. Right. And the proposal is to remove all of that traffic and make a single private entrance. There would be no traffic that would go through a neighborhood to the school. Is that correct?
That's what I'm understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Let me just add that for those listening, there is a primary entrance off Stillwood here.
Correct.
That would remain.
But I'm talking about this one that we have 65 people signed up that they don't want it to happen, but it's taking every bit of school traffic out of the neighborhood onto its own private road that may or may not be signalized, but that will be left up to the city traffic engineering.
Correct.
And get it out of the neighborhood.
Correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understood.
One moment, Mr. Perry. So before you start, I'm going to
ask. Answer the question. I understand.
Yes. And state your name for the record, but please address the question specifically asked by the commissioner.
Yep. John Perry again answering that question. No, there is not currently queuing. They do block off the road constantly, and we have exit traffic that goes at very high rates of speed through the neighborhood. That's why, and I want to be clear again too, though, we're not opposed at all to the road. Everybody in the neighborhood would love that. In fact, I was offered that as, well, what if we did the road first before we do anything other than the neighborhood?
So thank you.
That's the issue, is that.
So let me be clear. So the community's issue is not you guys are in favor of the road.
Oh, 100%.
Pulling the traffic out of the community. What you are opposed to is the access that was at
Would you want a maintenance yard in your backyard?
Well, gotcha. So it's the maintenance yard.
It's pushing into the neighborhood.
I just wanted to make sure that this board was very clear on what the community and the neighbors' issue actually is, opposed to whatever else
have been interpreted. We were told that they are not contingent upon each other.
Okay.
In fact, the offer was made. Well, do you think it would get some goodwill to do the road first? And now we're seeing already the bait and switch.
Okay.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And my final question for staff.
Okay.
It appears that it's drawn on this master plan, but there are set buffer guidelines, et cetera, for this parcel, whatever it's going to be, a kindergarten or maintenance yard or whatever it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Combine this property with the existing school campus and build something here, there will be required buffers along between them and any residentially zoned parcels.
Because it appears currently there might be a tree here or there, but it doesn't appear that the buffer requirements were adhered to, or they were non-existent when they developed the main.
Right, because it would have existed prior to.
Correct. So this will be even more buffered than the rest of the neighborhood.
Because it would require either a fence buffer and or a vegetative buffer.
That's right.
All right, thank you. Anything else? All right. We'll entertain a motion. Oh, actually, could you put Mr. Lawson, would you put the staff recommendation back up, please? Thank you. I don't think we've had anybody online all day. Thank you, sir. Okay. Yeah, another question. Need a clarification from you, Mr. Lawson.
Mr. Yellen, actually.
Oh, Mr. Yellen? Uh-oh. All
right. Would the petitioner be open to some kind of agreement or good faith effort with the community?
Yes, ma'am. And that was part of the process through the original rezoning as well, that there are actually restrictive covenants on the property from the prior rezoning. This property would be brought into that, which is part of what Mr. Lotson's addressing here, that it be brought into the school campus, which requires the master plan. Also, the covenant that we would then use it for school purposes would apply.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, ma'am. I was trying to address your actual question if I did it.
Yeah, I was I was hinting at something specifically around the road, building of the road prior to.
Yes, and I do believe from talking to Mr. Wilson that we could agree not to start construction on the Marydell property until we know that the road is approved. I think it needs to be approved. We can't build it because we need to start construction on that property to get it going, like we said, to move the items around inside of the bubble.
So logistically within the parameters of what the school currently functions in, you would need to move a function in order to
correct
that road.
Correct. The master plan shows, I want to say, at least 6 or 7 different new items that are coming that all need to happen in order to make sure that we can provide the access. And so we would agree that not to use that site until the road is approved.
Okay. Any further questions? Oh, what you got, Mr. Noah? You sure? Okay. So
I will ask the petitioner's representative, Mr. Yellen, is there any plan in that buffer to put some type of noise buffer fence or anything other than just some shrubs?
I believe that the requirement here when it's an institutional use against a residential use is 25 feet, and I believe it does have to be planted. I'm not sure about the fence requirement. The Perry's not, we did discuss buffers at the neighborhood meeting. I think there's an existing chain link fence that surrounds the site, which isn't
that good doesn't for anyone. Stop the blower noise and
correct, but
trucks in and out. And did you just say that there was a neighborhood meeting?
We did hold a neighborhood meeting, yes.
And how many people were there?
The Perry's were there along with the neighborhood presidents. There's, I think, some dueling neighborhood associations here. And so the neighborhood presidents from the neighborhood associations were there along with Alderman Pertee.
Anything further? Thank you. We'll entertain a motion.
Noah, I'll make a motion that we approve the request and the recommendation from staff. And I would encourage further dialogue with the neighbors on dealing with some type of noise buffer along that property.
Jeff Dentrick, I'll second that.
All right, so we've got a first and a second made by Mr. Noah, seconded by Mr. Notrika to approve as outlined in the staff recommendation, as well as, I guess, for record encouragement to, for further discussion with the property owner, the adjacent property to work through some sound attenuation efforts from as a from a buffer standpoint at the maintenance yard, et cetera.
And before we take a vote, just as I stated before, this still has to go before the city of Savannah. So there's another step that we need to be completed.
Any discussion on that motion? All right, hearing none, we'll enter a vote. Ms. Bowles.
No.
Ms. Epstein.
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. So the motion carries and the project is approved. Okay, move on to the next item on the agenda, and that is presentations. I don't think we have any surprise presentations this week. We'll move on to other business. I don't believe we have anything else to vote on.
Mr. Chairman and board, I just wanted to make a note that you've got these wonderful calendars before you that staff worked on for the new year. So I hope that you make good use of those. They spent a lot of time pulling that together and coming up with something that was interesting. And we had one of our newest staff members, and his name is Gabriel Bassi. He is from Texas and is finishing up his PhD. He'll be our data analyst, senior planner. So we will be collecting more information that we can use in helping to hopefully make better decisions. So thank you all, and I hope that you have a happy New Year. Well, gosh, I won't see you before the new year. So right. I should say happy holidays and happy new year. Thank
you. Thank you. We were going to break out into executive session. However, there is only such a small number here. So what I will probably be doing is reaching out to each of you just to kind of give you a brief update on matters with personnel. It's nothing that needs to be voted on. It was just me providing a update based off of what's that? Yeah. Well, you know what? Since we have a few, let's go into executive session, and the individuals that were not here, I will catch them up. So we got to move to go into executive session, correct?
Motion to go into executive session, Noah.
Cole, second.
Thank you.
At
Noah made motion to. Yeah, Noah makes motion to return from executive session in Cole general seconds. Business.
Sorry, microphone. In the executive session, we discussed personnel meetings. Nothing was voted on. So we'll go entertain a motion to adjourn.
Cole, so moved. Merry Christmas.
Noah, second.
Merry Christmas.